Welcome to episode 34 of the Baseball HQ Eyes Have It podcast. I'm Brent Hershey. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Blessing. Up at the top, I'll say if you could rate and review the podcast so others could find us, that would be a great thing to do. We always appreciate that. How are you doing, Chris? Got a good week coming up here, I think.
Doing well. Just going over my notes. I hadn't visited with my notes since last Wednesday on a bunch of Rangers prospects. So it's going to be a good week. How was your week, Brent?
Yep, it was good. I spent some time this afternoon going over my notes from seeing a couple of Orioles guys last week. And I'm excited to kind of just share some observations about that, too. So it's good that we were both out at the ballpark. Why don't we just jump right into it? You got a chance to see the Rangers High A Hickory team, which has a bunch of interesting guys. And of course, subscribers of the site got some insight into that last week as you wrote up. One of the guys you'll touch on quickly. It sounds like Evan Carter, an outfielder, was kind of the star of the show for your looks. What can you tell us about Carter?
So, yeah, Evan Carter was a second-round pick in the 2020 in the COVID draft from Elizabethton, Tennessee. And for longtime readers, I used to go to Elizabethton, Tennessee to go see the Elizabethton Twins. Kind of off the beaten path. If you're familiar with the Tri-Cities area of Tennessee, this is actually going to be east of Johnson City, which makes up the Tri-Cities. So kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And this guy was kind of off everybody's radar. This kid didn't really do the showcase circuit. He only appeared at one or two showcases, which is a good way for scouts to see him. Also, he wasn't near a metropolitan area that was, booming with baseball prospects like the Atlanta Metro or something like that. It's a rare thing in today's game to find a guy that was virtually unheard of get drafted in the second round. Got to see him. Quick notes here. He went 3-for-3, 4 plate appearances, hit 2 triples, a grand slam home run. Did about just about everything. He only swung the bat 3 times and scolded 3 balls. I would say exit velocities above a 105 on all 3 of them. Just absolutely destroyed the ball. So it was a really good look. I got to also watch a lot of video on him from previous week's series just to, see him struggle a bit and stuff, which he didn't really struggle, to be honest. He made a lot of hard luck contact in that series, didn't have the same success, but you could see this guy is morphing into a potential top fantasy prospect. I think there's an argument for him to be a top 15 prospect at midseason. He brings speed, even though the stolen bases haven't been there yet. But he's essentially a five-tool guy. I believe that the power will eventually come. You don't normally see guys hit the ball as hard as this and not have the power come eventually. But right now, it's a very flat, plain swing and not necessarily something that's conducive for a lot of lift. So I think this is your last chance to get in on Evan Carter before it kind of blows up a bit. 19 years old in high A. He is, I think, the youngest guy in the South Atlantic League. He might even be the youngest guy across high A because he's a young 19 for these purposes. So, again, Evan Carter, he's a dude to not miss out on.
Yeah, that's certainly a fun report. I've seen the numbers kind of creep up, and it's definitely good to hear someone that's actually seen him. And like we mentioned, for those subscribers, there's bunch more information on Carter on the article that ran at Baseball HQ last week.
Yeah, I went a whole page. I don't normally go a whole page on a guy, but I felt like he was worth that. So come on and check that out.
Second up is a familiar last name anyway, Jusangel Acuña, middle infielder for Texas. And is he anything like his older brother, I guess?
Same question. Well, the trivia question this day was whose brothers were on this team. And Ian Anderson's brother is also on this team. And Ronald Cunha's brother is also on this team. Obviously, this is who we're talking about here. And then I think there was another guy who had a brother on this team. And the guy missed the question. It was kind of sad, especially with the guy who was around second base pointing to himself as, his back of his jersey to say Acuna. I got again 4 plate appearances at Acuna. Both Carter and Acuna were lifted early because the game really got out of hand. Acuna saw a lot of pitches. I would say he's more of a hacker. He has a slight open stance with a pretty big leg kick for a guy his size. He's a shorter stature guy. He's listed at 5'10". I would say he's about 5'8", 5'7", 5'8". Acuna played for Down East last year and was a bit skinnier at this point. So his average is up this year. It's at 318. His on-base percentage is at 419. And his slugging is 538. So they all look like improvements over the 266, 345, 404 line. And I would definitely say that the slugging part of this is a definite improvement. The Acuna I saw in this game, and specifically in the games prior, was this is a kid that is missing a lot of, especially fastballs in the zone. More so up, but you can also beat him down too. He swung and missed a total of 4 times during this look. They were way off. He was way off. He struck out twice. He did walk. He did get some hard contact. He hit the ball, hit a liner right back to the pitcher that he got a single on. He proceeded to steal second base, and then he stole third base. This was after another guy had hit a home run, so it was a very crazy start. There's not really plus speed here. My home the first time on him on that ball that was essentially an infield single that he smoked. Was just below the plus, so he's probably kind of like above average runner. But it takes a lot for him to get going out of the box. And even on the bases, he didn't really seem like he had that other gear. He seemed very heady. He ran on the first move of each time, first and second base, and then to third base. Not much sophistication in that, of course, not, harder to figure out whether it's plus speed or not, but the reports have always had him at about above average speed. He's 19 for 21 in stolen base attempts. I think this is real. I think that, he is heady enough to, get double digit steals and that kind of thing. My issue here is I don't think he's a 318 hitter. I don't think he can continue that. I also don't think that he can continue the on-base percentage part because he wasn't a guy that was, and even in the video looks, wasn't taking close pitches. The other concern I had was his defensive position. So he's been a shortstop most of the time, 23 games this year. I saw him at second base. You don't normally see a shortstop converting over to second base at A+ when there's not a premium prospect, standing at shortstop. He made a bunch of errors this year so far at shortstop, averaging 1 error per, I guess, every other game almost. He has a 918 fielding percentage at short, so it's not really strong. Even his actions at second base don't seem like he's really rangy. Like he fits second base fine. He has enough range for that position, but I can see where shortstop might be a little taxing on him. So again, this is a guy we have listed as a shortstop who's likely a second baseman. He's also a guy that, is going to pile up strikeouts and has piled up strikeouts so far this year. We would like to see him have a little more flexibility with his swing plane, be able to get to some higher pitches, be able to get to some lower pitches instead of swinging essentially on one swing plane. It will be interesting to see if the Rangers do bump him up to Texas League this year, AA. I think that would be a very humbling experience over a 60-game period. It might be something that he excels at in maybe a 20-game period, but I think the league will kind of keep on. by 60 games that there's a way to get this guy out. And it's essentially giving him a steady diet of fastballs up and, you know, showing those breaking pitches, breaking out of the zone.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, even though he's Ronald's brother, I think the thing, again, looking at his page, I think that stands out that he's just a smaller guy. You say, you know, he's listed as 5'10". You said he's probably 5'8". And the fact, you know, you wonder, he's kind of trying a little hard. He's got a lot of pressure given his older brother. You know, he may not be as athletically gifted, that kind of thing. So you do hope that, he can kind of play within himself and have success that way. Well, let's move on to Aaron Zavala, another outfielder. They're roaming the outfield there in Hickory with Evan Carter. He was a high pick from a couple of years ago, I believe. What did you make of Zavala?
In this game, I saw Carter hit a home run. I saw another Trevor Hauver, who we're not going to talk about today. He hit a home run as well. And I also saw Zavala let off the game with a home run. Zavala also hit a double and a single. Two of his hits were hard hits, the double and the home run. So he had a game as well. I'll just say the first four guys had a game. They all got hard contact. This whole year, I haven't seen much of that. So it was good to see everybody perform. So then when I could watch the video and see them, you know, not necessarily be at the top of their game, I was able to create a scouting report for them. So in the Zavala, he's an upright open stance. There's a bit of a slight bat wrap as he gets his hands back to the hitting position. I think that's mostly because his hands are up and out over the plate. I think it's just harder for him to kind of recoil and get all you know, get that all moving ahead. In video looks, he was very patient, very selective, kind of like the aforementioned Evan Carter, who only swung three times. He was much more aggressive in this game. I think it might have been kind of the quality of pitching. That's another thing. Another good thing to go off of is when you see a guy, and in this case, I can't remember who was pitching for, last name Munoz for the Rome Braves, but he had nothing coming out of the pen. Like, he did not. Like, his pitches, I've seen him before, his pitches were not breaking. His fastball was uncontrollable, very flat. And, like, it was a hit-me-day type deal. And it, unfortunately, was a hit-me-day for him. So in Zavala's at-bat, like, that bat wrap kind of scares me a little. It hasn't really caused many swings and misses this year. But I can see where, and especially on video, where it's harder for him to get to hard contact, especially against harder throwers. So that's one of the good tests with Rome Braves. They have a lot of hard throwers. Even Munoz was throwing in the low to mid 90s, so I was able to get a grasp of it. But it was so recognizable out of his hand that when he hit that home run, like, you knew it right off the bat. You knew it was coming. Like all of these hard hits, even later in the game with Hauver, the pitching just wasn't on that day, and you could see it coming, essentially. Again, he battled. He did have longer at-bats. There was a lot of swings, but not many misses. I think he had three swings and misses out of maybe 30 total pitches that he saw. So, 25, I'm sorry. 25 total pitches he saw. So, like, this is a guy that most of his swings were battling, hacking things off, and not not swinging over anything or anything like that on, you know, too badly. On the outfield, he's kind of average. I think he could fit as a fourth outfielder, most likely. Again, there's not that power carry. I don't know if that's going to develop. But again, this is a very solid player. He's not necessarily a guy that I am all in on, and one of the reasons why I excluded him from my subscription article was because I don't really feel like he did anything different from before, from our evaluations in the offseason. He's pretty much that same guy. It's just maybe his projection has become a little bit clearer now, if that makes sense. Maybe more of an average projection than maybe a You know, a solid regular in fantasy. Maybe this is an average regular. This might even be a platoon bat, especially being a left-handed batter on the good side of the platoon against right-handed pitching. That will be his greatest, probably greatest value.
Yeah, and it looks to me too. I mean, just something to continue to watch as he moves up the ladder. You know, that he really does has a patient approach, or it takes a lot of walks, I should say. You know, has 52 walks in 59 games already, 52 walks, 52.5 strikeouts. So he's, you know, just about even for his career for K's against walks. And yeah, up through this, well, both last year, he had an OBP of 419, and this year his on base percentage is a 421. So, certainly, you know, gets a little tick up for those that are in on base leagues for sure.
Yes.
But yeah, with just you know, kind of a sprinkling of extra base hits, you know, slugging percentage still under 400. Definitely would hope he has, you know, can tap into some more pop there if we're going to project him kind of be a you know, an average full time non platoon regular.
Yeah, he's been mostly playing right field too, and he does have the above average arm for that. So like that should play there. It's just, again, there's not that power carry. I think like in, you know, 15 team league with the pretty expansive minor league system, this is a guy that I probably have on my radar. I don't know necessarily if he's on my roster. But this guy's a major league player. And, you know, I think that's the thing I want to say about all four of the guys we're talking about today. Well, Brent, I know that you got out to the ballpark to some triple A action this year again. So this time you showed up, and let me get this straight. The first time it was a rainout. First game you went out to this year, second game you went to, they scratched the guy. And then this one was a game filled with some sprinkles and some like not nice weather. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. It was sort of a misty evening the whole time. Eventually later on started raining. I had to move. You know, I was sitting through it for a while and eventually moved back. And you know, it's just a hassle trying to take notes and kind of keep things straight during games like that. But it was yes, and it was at Lehigh Valley, Triple A Lehigh Valley, who had Norfolk, the Baltimore club, in last week. And so having two of those big infielders there to take a look at, Gunnar Henderson and Jordan Westberg, kind of made it worth it just to kind of get through and see what they have. Henderson, of course, is kind of you know, a huge helium guy this year. Went back to Double A. We talked about both of these guys for a little bit last year. Started Henderson at Double A this year, and he went kind of nuts in 47 games there. OPS over 1,000, 312, with a 452 on base and a 573 slugging percentage. One thing from watching Henderson last year is there was a good bit of swing and miss there, 143 strikeouts in 105 games. But he's really tightened that up, this year. And his game just is much more mature. You know, coming up for batting practice, he was hitting kind of hard liners all over the place, longer, you know, not just line drives, but longer drives to the outfield. He's a left-handed hitter with a wide stance, you know, just a minimum stride, goes to left center field easily. You can see kind of that the power's there kind of for all fields. He's a, you know, a good strong build, a quick swing, and yeah, the maturity just sort of showed up in this game that I took in, especially with regards to kind of plate approach. There were several times where he had you know, really taking really close pitches, you know, pitches just off the plate in deep counts, showing the ability to kind of discern balls and strikes and kind of know that those pitches weren't going to be ones that he could drive. You know, I've had reports, I've seen reports throughout the year of the better plate discipline. And then although he had a couple of strikeouts this game, he went kind of 0-for-3 with a sac fly, also had a walk in there. Really, you know, it's the strikeouts weren't overly concerning. Yeah, and there was a couple times where he was fooled on some stuff from an older pitcher, especially, you know, some curveballs threw him off balance. But on some other things, you know, the speed looked good. He had a 4.25 time on a 4.3 ground out. And then in the ninth came up and hit the kind of game-winning sacrifice fly, which is always good to see. The his defense is interesting because for both of these, for both him and Westberg, as they've kind of moved up together, both through Aberdeen and then Bowie and now up in the AAA Norfolk, they've been kind of flipping them back and forth between third base and shortstop. In this game, Henderson was playing shortstop, which was the kind of the ninth time he did that. He's played third base 8 times. And he was confident there. He made an error, an error flubbing a ball with a runner kind of in his way. And again, the conditions weren't great. But he made plays on kind of both sides of the bag as they were doing shifting. He turned a double play, looked solid from there. I still think shortstop may be a little bit of a stretch for him defensively. I think he could probably get by there, but I would think he probably settles long-term at third base. But it was good to see throughout the series, just checking in on it. He had 2 home runs later on in the series, went 7-for-26, and now through through these 18 games at Triple-A as a 20-year-old, is hitting 288, 422, 515. So it's really impressive. And it's, it's all there. And I would think, if he continues at kind of this level, I mean, it might even be something where he gets a taste of the majors, for a couple of weeks at the very end of the year.
Yeah, one of the things I'm looking at some internal data that I've got, he has a less than 15% chase rate, according to my data this year. Yeah, less than 15% chase rate. That's pretty amazing. I don't know what his O swing truly is. You know, I don't have all of the data this year, but on the data that I do have, it's a very low chase rate. It looks like the one pitch that's given him any sort of problems chasing is changeup, which you would kind of expect out of a guy, even as they get to the major leagues. Usually the last pitch that they really have that command of. And it's because of the drop out of the zone, of course. Yeah, But like, and he's a guy that's, you know, for a slugger that's swing and miss is below 30%. I think you got a good one here, Brent. I know that you've been tracking him the last couple of years, and I think that you've got a good one. I think this is a I mean I don't know about your rating, but let's hear about your rating. What do you think your rating is for him right now?
Yeah, I was looking at that earlier. We had him as an 8C. I had him as an 8C in the book, and I think the likelihood of him becoming an 8-ish player is certainly higher than that. So if we were to do it now, I might go 8B or 8A, or, you know, possibly even a 9D. I mean, it's the, it, it just seems his, again, mature approach and having the strength to be able to handle so far this pitching that he's seen at that age, factoring in kind of continued development, I think it could be, you know, it could be a pretty special player.
I've got him at a 9C. I think that an 8B is his next ranking below that. I wouldn't go to 8A. I have 9C because the age, the fact that he is, you know, walking so much at the higher levels at this age, I think that's a good sign to show that this is going to be kind of continuing. I don't know how many bases he's stolen this year, but I know that he's somewhat of a threat there. So even if he gives me a handful there, I think that he'll have the average and the power to kind of carry that nine rating, possibly through the major leagues. But still, it's still just a 9C. I don't think I can go up to a 9B yet. I've watched about 25 at-bats of him this year on video. And, you know, I mean, we're talking semantics here. You know, we're not talking necessarily any difference. I think we're both in pretty agreement that this guy's probably a 9 on our rankings now, and with the likely outcome of somewhere in the 8s.
Yeah, just to finish up, yes, and he is stealing bases. He's 14 for 16 so far over the two levels, just two at Triple A so far, but definitely a solid runner and the type that I think you could see getting to those double-digit steals in the majors because of, you know, the combination of kind of smarts and maturity as well as athletic ability.
Well, you have another guy, too, in this game, and you briefly mentioned him already. He's a guy that you've seen before. He's another shortstop by trade, 6'3", 203, Jordan Westberg. He was a first-round pick. Actually, I think he was a supplemental pick out of Mississippi State for the Orioles in 2020. Update us on his progress.
Yeah. So Westberg, too, in this game, Westberg was playing third base, where I've seen him most of the time. Although it's interesting when you look at his positional breakdown so far in Triple A, especially, he's been 9 times at shortstop, just 2 at third base. So that was one of the 2 times that I saw him, and 5 times at second base. And so I think they're definitely moving him around a little bit more. And when, you know, watching him between innings, you know, taking ground ball or taking, you know, the practice throws and all that sort of thing, and seeing them do some infield practice, he doesn't strike me to have, you know, a third baseman's kind of combination of arm strength, and his throwing mechanics are just a little bit odd. So I can kind of see where I can see where, although he would be big for a second baseman, he's 6'3", 203, but maybe second base is where he ends up there. Again, it's just something about his arm stroke that seems much more fit for that kind of.
It reminds me, and it, for people who you know, saw Daniel Murphy early in his career. Daniel Murphy came up as a third baseman. He ended up at first base towards the end, but primarily played second base as a big leaguer. That was maybe even a longer arm circle, I guess. I've never called an arm circle with a guy in the infield, but like Westberg just never looks comfortable throwing the ball, and Daniel Murphy didn't either. So, and Daniel Murphy was 6'3 as well. So, like, there's that opportunity there as a, you know, maybe a, you know, you're going to hit, you're going to do, you know, if you're going to bring the offense, they'll find a ring for you at second base. And that's essentially what they did to Daniel Murphy, who, the famous story is when he went to college, they asked him what position he played, and he said he batted third. So, I mean, it could be the same thing with Jordan Westberg.
Yeah. And not to say that, you know, I mean, he's made some good plays. I've seen him a couple times over the years, especially coming in on balls. And he did one of these again where you know, kind of a slow chopper between the mound and third, and is comes in, gets rid of it quickly. You know, a good transfer. So it's not like he's a bumbler.
He's a good athlete. It's just his throwing mechanics are weird.
Yeah, it's just that you you know, can't quite see him making that play from third behind the bag or deep in the hole as a shortstop kind of thing. And I think that that's likely to be kind of weeded out here as he gets to the majors and they you know, find a place to be more comfortable. I'm continued to be kind of interested in the bat too. You know, there were some times where he had some ugly looking swings, but there were times where he showed some really good kind of in at bat adjustments. There was a pitcher, I forget who it was against. It was kind of, you know, nothing special, but 92, 93, but with a really good, you know, slower curveball, 77, 78, you know, kind of tough to adjust to, especially, you know, for some of these younger players. I think the pitcher was one of these, you know, quad A veteran kind of guys. But anyway, he, you know, threw him one of these curveballs. It was way out in front. Threw him a second one and, you know, adjusted a little bit. And threw a third one, tripled up on it, and he and Westberg just nailed it foul. I mean, it was obvious that he was right on it and timing it well and kind of, you know, adjusting to it. Came back with a 92 fastball, you know, popped him up for a foul out. But I thought the in-game, you kind of the in-at-bat adjustment there, recognizing it, being able to make hard contact was a really good sign. The thing that most stood out to me with Westberg, and this is something that I remember also talking about him last year, is just the baseball kind of instincts that he has. And in this game, you know, it was the top of the ninth. They were down one. He was coming up second in the inning. There was a leadoff walk. You know, the pitcher was having some control problems. It was 3-0, but it worked it back to 3-2. And then Westberg just blasted this high fastball, took it the other way, and banged it off to kind of the right center field fence. Scored the run all the way from first, got far enough away from the fielder that Westberg got all the way to third on a triple. And then Henderson was up next and kind of on the first or second pitch, I believe, you know, lifted a kind of medium fly ball to sort of right center field. Definitely not a surefire sacrifice fly. And one of those where it wasn't a high fly ball, it was one that was, you know, kind of had a lower trajectory. So if he was going to score on it, he had to be back at the bag and like split second for sure he wanted to go, which he did and took off. The throw was just a little bit offline. Would have been a close play at the plate, but definitely it was something when he scored and that was the go-ahead run. It continued to kind of, you know, bring up this kind of instinctual, is all I can think of, kind of sense that he had on the bases there, which I think, you know, will endear him to kind of, you know, the old school baseball guys and be really part of be a really important part of a team context as he moves up. I think for me, for sure, with the improvements that Henderson has shown from the left side, the power and all that, I mean, he's definitely a higher ceiling prospect. But I do think there's some, because these guys are, you know, left side infielders so far, kind of coming up together, even though Westberg, being a college guy, is several years older, he's 23. You know, I think there's a sense that Westberg gets a little bit overshadowed there by Henderson's, you know, amazing feats at his younger age. And I think it's just important to, continue to track Westberg and kind of, you know, take note of what he's doing there. I mean, he's a well-built, athletic guy from the you know, hitting from the right side, a very simple swing mechanic, you know, balance for the most part. Not going to be a super, I don't think, you know, all out power guy, but just an overall, you know, really solid major league hitter from the right side.
That was very interesting on Westberg. Hopefully he debuts this year. I think he has a better chance of debuting than Henderson, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's 23, so a little older. I think Baltimore will be able to move him around a little bit to try him out this year. And so I think it would be really possible that we see him at Camden Yards sometime this summer.
Well, Brent, what do you have on tap this week?
I have Jersey Shore down the road in Wilmington. So I'm going to get to at least one of those games. I'm going to be, I hope to get either Griff McGarry, who we talked about last year and is pitching there, or Mick Abel. That will be the first time I get to see Abel. I think I'm going to try to prioritize that. I'm still checking with the schedule to make that work. And there are a couple of marginal hitters I want to check in on too, with the Jersey Shore, the high A Phillies team. But if I can get Abel, that will be a good catch, I think.
Yeah, no mention of any Nationals prospects. So, I mean,
yeah, well, maybe, you know, we can be surprised at these things. So perhaps I'll run into something and bring something back. But that Wilmington team, at least on paper, is a little rough. How about you, Chris? What's up for you this week?
Well, barring a change, I'm probably sitting out. The White Sox AA team, Birmingham, is in town for the third time this year. And so I don't know if I want to go see Jose Rodriguez, Yolquist, Seth Cespedes, Sean Burke. I don't know if I want to go see those guys again. It's what it is. It's not the strongest farm system in the world, and probably their best team on the farm, if that makes sense. And I'm already done with them, if that makes sense as well. So I'm probably going to opt out for the whole week. I might look around if there's anything worth going to this weekend. It's probably going to be a heavy video week for me. So, that's kind of how the cookie crumbles sometimes, right?
That's how it is. Yep. But we make it work for sure. I'm sure you'll bring some goodies back for next week's episode. Well, thanks for listening to this episode of The Eyes Have It. Was a blast as always. You can always contact us. We'd love to have some listener questions on a future show. You can email us at theeyeshaveit@baseballhq.com or reach out to us on Twitter. Chris is at @C_blessing. You can find me at @BrentHQ. Thanks for subscribing. And again, please rate and review us. Chris, till another week. Have a good watching baseball time.
I hope you get Mick Abel so we have something for next week's episode.
Yeah.
All right, take care.